Now from meditation we pass on to our second topic, which is, what is psychotherapy? Psychotherapy is briefly defined as the treatment of disorders by psychological methods. Now that's clear, but it's very general. It's not very explicit, not very detailed. So let's turn for a little help to Carl Jaspers. In his General Psychopathology, Jaspers defines psychotherapy as follows. He says, psychotherapy is the name given to all those methods of treatment that affect both psyche and body by measures which proceed via the psyche. The cooperation of the patient is always required. Psychotherapy has application to those who suffer from the many types of personality disorder, psychopathies, also to the mildly psychotic patient, to all people who feel ill and suffer from their psychic state, and almost without exception to physical illnesses, which so often are overlaid with neurotic symptoms and with which the personality must inwardly come to terms. So this is Jaspers' somewhat more comprehensive, even philosophical, definition of psychotherapy. And he goes on to describe the various means, the various methods of influencing the psyche which psychotherapy has in its possession, at its disposal. And he classifies these means, these methods, as 1, methods of suggestion, then cathartic methods, then methods involving practice and training, then methods of re-education, and finally methods that address themselves to personality. According to Jaspers, there are these 5 categories of methods at the disposal of psychotherapy. Now, as I expect everybody knows, one of the best known and most fruitful kinds of psychotherapy is that known as psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis began round about the turn of the century with the work, with the discoveries of Freud. And according to Jaspers, psychoanalysis is one of the cathartic methods. Now, catharsis means simply purging. And in a psychological context, it refers to the freeing, to the liberation, to the purging, as it were, of repressed emotion. But of course, the great question is, how did the emotion come to be repressed? It was repressed, according to Freud, because, putting it very generally, it was unacceptable to the conscious self. The conscious self didn't want it, didn't like it, as it were. And being unacceptable to the conscious self, incompatible with its attitudes, its beliefs, and so on, it was thrust out of consciousness. In other words, it became unconscious. This thrusting out of consciousness of the emotion, which is not acceptable to the conscious self, is itself not a conscious, but an unconscious, an automatic process. Now, this emotion, which has been thrust out, which has been cast out, if you like, from the heaven of consciousness, may be repressed. It may be unconscious, but it is still alive. It is still active. According to Freud again, and here he agrees very much with traditional Buddhist psychological teaching, according to Freud, mental life is dynamic on every level. So being active, the repressed emotion can go on producing effects. And it can go on producing effects even on the level of the conscious self, the conscious mind. But the conscious self, the conscious mind, does not know what is producing these effects. The conscious mind, the conscious self, only knows that something seems to be going wrong. Only knows that something seems to be working against, counteracting its own wishes and its own desires, its own intentions, its own ideas. The repressed emotions, of course, themselves remain all this time unconscious. Now, all this means that there's a split. Not only a split, but a conflict. In the first place, there's a split between the conscious self and the unconscious self, or between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, or between consciousness and the unconscious. And in the second place, there's a conflict between the desires and intentions of the conscious self and the desires and intentions of the unconscious self. Or we may say, between emotions which have been repressed and emotions which have not been repressed. Now, in his later thought, Freud speaks of a conflict between what he calls the pleasure principle, which dominates the unconscious mind, and what he calls the reality principle, which directs the conscious mind. Putting it more simply, putting it more colloquially, we can say that the conflict is between what we would like to do, on the one hand, and what we are obliged to do, on the other, on account of the objective circumstances in which we find ourselves. And this split, this conflict, which can go very deep, which can be very intense, finds expression in various ways. It finds expression in dreams, which are very often just simple wish fulfillments. It finds expression in what Freud called the psychopathology of everyday life. For example, in the little slips of the tongue which express the opposite of one's conscious ideas and conscious intentions. It expresses itself also in the symptoms of the various kinds of mental disorder. Now, the actual method of treatment employed in psychoanalysis is that of what is known as continuous free association. It looks very simple, it sounds very simple. The patient just goes on talking. Just goes on talking about, well, just anything that comes into his or her head. And eventually, after talking for quite a long time, it may be days or weeks or even months, he or she eventually approaches the ideas or incidents associated with the repressed emotion. And when that time comes, when that stage is reached, then, with the encouragement of the analyst, he or she recalls these, experiences the repressed emotion, discharges the energy it contains, and comes eventually to some sort of terms with it. In this way, the catharsis takes place. What was unconscious has become conscious. And this process may take not just weeks or months, but even, in some cases, years. And according to Freud, of course, the repressed emotion is usually, perhaps He even suggests invariably associated with sex. Now, psychotherapy is a fairly recent development. Psychotherapy in general. Psychoanalysis is a more recent development still. But we may say that they already play an important part in the lives of very many people, more especially, of course, in the West. It's said that in the United States, well-to-do people have a psychotherapist or a psychoanalyst just as a matter of course. In the same way that you have your doctor and your solicitor, you also have your analyst, and you make appointments with all three of them, in some cases, every week. In many ways, we may say, in some circles, the psychotherapist has replaced the priest. The priest hasn't got very much to do these days. Sometimes, it seems, even the priest goes to the psychotherapist. More rarely, the psychotherapist goes to the priest, at least for some discussion. Now, psychotherapy has come into existence for a definite reason. It didn't just drop down out of the clouds as a sort of gratuity. Psychotherapy, including psychoanalysis, came into existence because more and more people are becoming mentally ill, are becoming mentally sick. In Jaspers' phrase, feeling ill and suffering from their psychic state. This sort of thing is a general, a characteristic feature of modern life, of modern society. I'm not going to give any figures. I didn't, I'm afraid, take the trouble to dig them up. The facts are, in any case, sufficiently well known. But I want to mention just one fact, just one circumstance. I remember last year, I happened to read in a newspaper, it was a tiny little item, apparently no one considered it very important, a little item to the effect that in the course of the preceding year, not less than 5,000 young people had committed suicide. 5,000. That would say 5,000 people under 25. Now, obviously, they didn't commit suicide because they were happy. They were suffering from their psychic state. And they were suffering from it so badly that death was preferable to life on those terms. Now, 5,000 is quite a large number. But we may say that the number of those who suffer in a lesser degree, or even less acutely, than the 5,000 young people who committed suicide is even greater. Perhaps it runs into hundreds of thousands. Perhaps it runs into millions. Freud said that everybody was neurotic to some extent. The Buddha said that all worldly people, that is, all who are not actually fully enlightened, are mad. He went even further than Freud. So where are all these people to go? Where are they to go for help? To whom are they to go? There are, of course, the priests. They were first in the field, priests of different persuasions. So far as the West is concerned, well, you can go the whole range from Billy Graham on the one hand to the Archbishop of Canterbury on the other. And then you've got all sorts and kinds of psychotherapists and all sorts of schools of psychoanalysts. You've got the Freudians and the Jungians and the Adlerians and the Neo-Freudians and the Kleinians and the Reichians and the Frommians and so on. So many schools of them already. And then, of course, more recently, at least in many of the larger metropolitan centres in the West, there are various Oriental meditation teachers, from the Maharishi downwards, or upwards as the case may be. You pay your money and you take your choice. So which shall it be? Shall it be the local vicar or Ronald Lang? Shall it be electric shock treatment or Zen? Shall it be meditation or psychotherapy?